The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include virus variant batters airline bookings for Labor Day weekend and gasoline jumps, oil falls as Ida landfall seen sparing rigs. After a surge in bookings early this summer, U.S. airline passengers are planning fewer trips as the spread of the coronavirus Delta variant continues to discourage travel. Spending for the Labor Day holiday was down 16% from 2019 as of August 21st, while bookings were off 15%, according to the Adobe Digital Economy Index. The weekend typically marks the end of stepped-up summer travel for U.S. carriers, and demand often rises as families seek to squeeze in a last trip before school resumes. Adobe's findings line up with recent warnings from airlines that increased illnesses tied to the variant are slowing sales and prompting customers to cancel reservations, threatening to derail a recovery from last year's collapse in demand. Southwest Airlines Company has said the weakness may make it difficult to turn a third quarter profit. American Airlines Group, Inc. said August revenue was coming in below its expectations. We expect to spend in the month of August to be significantly under July, Vivek Pania, Adobe Digital Insights lead analyst, said in a statement Monday. These 2 months historically have similar spend levels. Online spending for flights dropped to $2.9 billion through the first 3 weeks of this month, down 33% from the same period in 2019. That was about double the change for July. The number of bookings fell 22% from the beginning of August. The index tracks direct flight bookings for 6 of the top 10 U.S. carriers. July domestic bookings were $5.26 billion, down 16% from 2019 and off 13% from June. July was the first month since the pandemic began in which fares reached 2019 levels. They were 1% below in June and 8% lower in May. The number of travelers passing through U.S. airport security checkpoints has hovered around 77% in recent weeks, down from an average of 79% in mid-July, according to the Transportation Security Administration. Ticket prices were 28% below 2019 levels at the start of this year, according to Adobe. Consumers spent $34 billion online for air travel this year through July, down 28% from the 2019 level. Next, gasoline jumps, oil falls as Ida landfall seen sparing rigs. U.S. gasoline futures jumped after Hurricane Ida barreled ashore in Louisiana, disrupting processing facilities. Oil reversed early gains as local rigs may have escaped significant damage, and the OPEC producers cartel is expected on Wednesday to endorse a supply increase. Gasoline for October spiked more than 4% in New York before parring its advance, while West Texas intermediate crude fell around 1%. Last week, WTI rallied 10% as investors wagered global demand would recover from the setback posed by the spread of the Delta coronavirus variant. Both crude oil and gasoline have been hit by volatile trading this month as investors weighed the challenge to consumption posed by the resurgence of the pandemic in parts of Asia, the U.S., and Europe. This week, traders will focus on the fallout from IDA, as well as the likelihood that the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies will go ahead with an increase in output when they meet. The market will be looking at the product stocks and the risk of onshore damage from IDA, said Matt Stanley, a senior broker at Star Fuels in Dubai. Now that the storm has made landfall, it looks like the worst is past for the offshore platforms, and over the next couple of days, operators can look at getting those back up. Gulf of Mexico producers shut in more than 1.7 million barrels a day of crude output, about 15% of the total for the U.S., ahead of the storm. The focus for crude markets is now shifting back to the virus and OPEC, Stanley said. Refiners, including Valero Energy Corp, shut about 12% of U.S. oil processing capacity as a precaution ahead of a Category 4 storm, which had stronger winds than Katrina in 2005. Colonial Pipeline Company, the operator of the largest fuel distribution system from the refining centers in Texas and Louisiana to customers across the U.S., idled its main network. Gasoline prices in the southeast U.S. could climb heading into the end of summer if refineries suffer extensive damage or can't get power and are forced to stay shut for an extended period, adding to the price inflation hitting Americans. Traders in Europe have already been preparing to fill any gap in supplies at New York Harbor, provisionally chartering tankers. Still, those would take as much as 2 weeks to cross the Atlantic. For a Category 4, you could be looking at 4 to 6 weeks or more of downtime for the refineries, said Andy Lipow, president of Lipow Oil Associates, LLC, in Houston. IDA, which came ashore about 60 miles south of New Orleans, drove up ocean levels as much as 16 feet. The hurricane's 150-mile-per-hour winds tie Louisiana's record set by Laura in 2020 and a 19th-century storm. Next, Triangle jump in used car prices is among highest across the U.S. Used cars have been flying off dealership lots in North Carolina and across the U.S., and their prices have steadily risen with the demand. College junior Jackson Davis knows it, and he's waiting for the market to settle before he can buy a 2001 or 2002 Toyota 4Runner. I've had a 2001 Toyota Corolla for a couple of years and realized over the summer that I needed a bigger car to support my interest in going outdoors to hike and climb and the travel necessary for that, said Davis, who lives in Cary. There isn't a lot out there for a super reasonable price, to be frank. He noticed there are fewer available cars on the market. The car prices aren't really reflective of what a person would see on the expected price on Kelley Blue Book, for example, he said. They're higher. The Triangle had the sixth highest increase of used car prices from June 2020 to June 2021 across the 50 most populous metro regions, a study by the car search website iCars.com found. Used car prices in the Greater Triangle region in June this year increased by 38.2% on average over the past year, or $8,446, as used car demand rose and the nationwide automotive microchip shortage began. That outpaces the national price increase of 32.7% in that time frame, according to an analysis of 1.1 million used car sales in June 2021 from model years 2016 to 2020. Compared to 800,000 used car sales in June 2020 of car model years 2015 to 2019. The factors that affect the Raleigh-Durham market are the same factors that affect the rest of the nation, said ICCars.com analyst Carl Brauer. One main driver is the microchip shortage, which has limited the supply of new vehicles. Because consumers aren't buying as many new cars, they aren't trading in their used ones, which has lowered the used car inventory. Another factor is rental car fleets selling off their inventory last year to survive the economic downturn, reducing used car inventory available from rental car companies. Many consumers have bought used cars for the first time to avoid public transportation, while people who kept their jobs during the pandemic and received stimulus checks have had more money to buy vehicles, Brauer said. How much have prices increased? In the triangle, more expensive used cars like the GMC Sierra 1500 pickup truck, worth $51,000, rose in price on average by about $16,000, ICCars.com said. The less expensive Subaru Legacy sedan with an average used price of $21,650 saw an increase of about $6,800, according to ICCars.com figures. Prices are expected to remain elevated until early 2022, said Brauer, with hopes of the microchip shortage being resolved and new car inventory replenished. Not all used cars have seen such drastic price increases. Used car dealership Downtown Raleigh Auto Sales cars for around $5,000 or less, and the price increase for those cars has been around $500 to $1,000 in the last year, said owner Patrick Sullivan. It's the old trickle-down effect. It's something at the top, said Sullivan. The new cars aren't being made, people aren't trading them in, and that just affects us down at the bottom there as far as getting inventory. Larger dealerships don't have new inventory for sales and have been buying used cars, and they're paying more for them, he said. In many cases, Sullivan has seen remote work has led to people who once commuted to work daily to sell newer cars since their need for them isn't so great. They're selling their nearly new car with a value that is really high right now, he said. Then they're just parlaying that into buying, you know, a $4,000 or $5,000 car, and that's just going to be kind of their around-town commuter. Some vehicles in the Triangle area have increased more than average, which makes them the worst vehicles to buy while in a lucrative trade-in, according to ICCars.com. The five vehicles with the most used price increases since last June here are the Nissan Leaf, Volvo XC60, Toyota Prius, Lexus RX350, and GMC Sierra 1500, the study found. The Mazda CX-3 and Mitsubishi Outlander have seen smaller price changes in comparison, making them a choice for strained Triangle buyers. Next, instead of vaccine mandates, companies turn to wellness programs. That's a problem. As we've been reporting, one key to improving COVID-19 vaccination rates in the U.S. is held by employers who can and should mandate the shots for all employees other than those with legitimate medical reasons for refusing. Mandates are simple, straightforward, and effective. No shot, no job. There's virtually no question that they're legal, having been waived through in federal court. That's especially true now that one of the vaccines distributed by Pfizer has been granted final approval by the Food and Drug Administration, with the same certification in the offing for the others commonly in use in the U.S., made by Moderna and Johnson & Johnson. Following the Pfizer approval, President Biden urged business leaders to follow through with vaccination mandates. If you're a business leader, a nonprofit leader, a state or local leader who has been waiting for full FDA approval to require vaccinations, I call on you now to do that, he said August 23rd. Yet many employers are still shy about imposing vaccine requirements on their employees. And the alternative could be much worse for workers than a vaccination mandate. The alternative we're talking about exploits a legal loophole granted to employer wellness programs. Under federal law, these can be a vehicle for allowing discrimination in health plan fees. They can also provide a means for employers to invade their workers' privacy. Delta Airlines pioneered this approach when it announced a quasi-vaccination mandate for its employees last week. Instead of flatly requiring all workers to get vaccinated against COVID-19, the airline provided them with an escape clause. Those who refuse the shots without a legitimate excuse will be paying an extra $200 a month in health premiums. For the most part, federal law forbids large group plans such as those offered by big employers to use individuals' health issues as grounds for differential premiums. The only permitted exception is for smokers, though most employees don't bother to impose any surcharge in those cases. That's where the wellness loophole comes in. The Federal Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996, known as HIPAA, carved out a wellness exception. The most often cited provision of HIPAA protects the privacy of people's medical records from disclosure by healthcare entities, but the wellness carve-out is also important. The exception allowed premium discounts of up to 20% for employees enrolled in those programs, as long as they're voluntary. Put another way, a penalty of 20% for those who don't sign up. The Affordable Care Act of 2010 raised the permissible variance to 30%. Anything over that limit could be judged coercive and thus disallowed. That's the exception that theoretically allows Delta to charge its unvaccinated workers more. Whether the airline is compliant with the HIPAA and ACA rules can't be determined because Delta isn't saying what it normally charges for health coverage. The average employer premium for single coverage was $7,470 last year, according to a survey by Kaiser Family Foundation. If that's the cost of a Delta plan, its $200 monthly surcharge would come to 32%, just beyond the permissible limit. The company says its change meets all applicable legal requirements. There are legitimate grounds for concern that allowing distinctions between vaccinated and unvaccinated workers places the country at the top of a slippery slope. As my colleague David Lazarus observes, what would keep employers from trying to discriminate against workers they judge to be overweight, or who suffer from diabetes or heart disease, or choose to engage in dangerous hobbies such as rock climbing or skydiving? Getting rid of the widespread practice of discriminating against people based on health issues, whether it was HIPAA in the 1990s or the Affordable Care Act in 2010, was a long and hard-fought effort, said Sabrina Corlett, co-director on the Center of Health Insurance Reforms at Georgetown University. I get the anger at the people who are choosing to remain unvaccinated, Corlett says, but I do worry more broadly about this general impulse to look at someone's behavior or health status and say we should charge them more or deny them insurance. Big employers can feel a strong urge to discriminate because they're typically self-insured. That is, they bear most of the financial risk of employee health care bills and employee insurance companies chiefly to administer their health plans. Indeed, in announcing Delta's plan, CEO Edward Bastian cited the financial risk the decision to not vaccinate is in creating for our company. Hospital stays for COVID-19 infected employees were costing the airline an average of $50,000 per patient, he said. The potential costs have been prompting more employers to institute or contemplate vaccination mandates. According to a survey released earlier this month by the healthcare consultancy Mercer, of the 372 employers responding to Mercer's poll, 14% require or plan to require all employees returning to their work sites to be vaccinated, with another 15% requiring vaccinations for certain jobs and functions such as business travel or customer contact. That's a significant increase over the results from a poll of 425 employers 3 months earlier, in which only 3% planned to require vaccination and only 8% even considered doing so. Healthcare cost increases are also what made wellness programs so alluring for corporate managements. The program's promoters have filled executives' ears with the promise that encouraging employees to lose weight, exercise more, and stop smoking will yield measurable reductions in medical cost. As many as half of all major employers offer wellness programs with incentives ranging from logo-imprinted water bottles to gym memberships to health insurance discounts. In practice, however, these programs have been shown to be largely useless in producing health care savings, better health, or improved work performance. A trial reported in 2019 involving 33,000 employees of BJ's Wholesale Club, a big East Coast warehouse retailer, found no significant differences in self-reported health and behaviors, clinical markers of health, healthcare spending or utilization, or absenteeism, tenure, or job performance after 18 months. A similar study published in 2018 of 12,000 workers in Illinois similarly found no significant causal effect of treatment on total medical expenditures, health behaviors, employee productivity, or self-reported health status. The only studies finding benefits in wellness programs, including one at PepsiCo covering 2003 through 2011, attributed the savings not to the healthy lifestyle components, but to disease management. At PepsiCo, employees got close-up and personal disease management if they had one of 10 chronic conditions, including asthma, diabetes, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, hypertension, or lower back pain. That's a well-understood method of controlling health care cost, but it doesn't need to be part of a wellness program, and it isn't limited by government regulations. The only reason employers might resort to the wellness carve-out is that they're too nervous to go all out with a vaccination mandate. In some cases, their reluctance may be understandable. Changing workplace rules might require them to negotiate with their unions, or might provoke pushback from local or state politicians pursuing a retrograde partisan health care agenda. This might have stayed the hand of Delta, which is headquartered in Georgia, a state with a governor who has taken a stand against COVID-related regulations. The drawbacks of going only part of the way toward full vaccination mandates and substituting punishment through health care premiums are only increasing. To the extent that results in people losing health care coverage because they can't afford it anymore, that cuts off access to the very messengers that might be needed to convince someone to get a vaccine, Corlett told me. Primary care doctors, pediatricians, family doctors may be our best hopes. Why would we cut off access to those healthcare professionals who are so critical to the vaccination campaign? Next, North Carolina ends $100 COVID vaccine card incentive. Tuesday was the last day to earn $100 in North Carolina for getting vaccinated against COVID-19, as the state looks to other avenues in its continued fight to contain the spreading Delta variant. The state's summer card incentive program previously offered $25 cards to those 18 or older getting their first doses of a COVID-19 vaccine, but the state increased those incentives to $100 on August 4th to further drive vaccination rates. In a press release Monday, the NC Department of Health and Human Services said that change saw notable increases in demand among some vaccine providers, with several running out of their card supply in a single day. Providers also saw increases in recipients of the cards rise as much as 98% compared to the week before, DHHS said. Cards with a $25 value were also awarded to those who drove people to get their first shots. Bailey Pennington, a spokeswoman for DHHS, said 133,098 summer cards have been distributed as of August 30th, amounting to $3,327,450. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.